Ruth is the story of a awesome daughter-in-law that took care of her mother-in-law and very faithful to her, and that ended up being a really important lady when it comes to in the biblical sense, because she's in the line of Christ as far as his humanity goes. The book of Ruth is set in the time of the judges, the first 300 or 400 years that Israel is dwelling in the land. So Joshua brings them in, and they're ruled for about 300 or 400 years by judges. So somewhere within this time frame, the book of Ruth, or the story of Ruth, takes place. Now, Ruth is one of two books in the Bible that's named after women, and the other one is Esther. Very good. And there's kind of an interesting contrast with that. And Esther, if you remember, she was Jewish, and she married a very prominent Gentile king. But I want to take a stab at that king's name. Okay, very good. Difficult to pronounce, but yeah, King Ahasuerus. And she was raised up to save her people, wasn't she, for such a time as this. So a Jewish woman marrying a prominent Gentile king. And here you have Ruth, who is a Moabite. So a Gentile, okay, non-Jewish woman, who marries a prominent Jew, Boaz, which we'll be introduced to in just a moment, to bring an even greater deliverance, because, as I already mentioned, this is the line of Christ, where Jesus would come and redeem a lost humanity back to God. Ruth is read annually at the Feast of Pentecost, okay? And the author is possibly Samuel. And we'll jump in. Chapter 1, verse 1 is where, and the nice thing about our pace on Wednesday nights is we're going so fast when we come to just four chapters. The cool thing about it is we get to read the whole book, you know. So let's go ahead and jump right in. Now, it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. Now, exactly where or when this took place in the book of Judges is pure speculation. We don't know if it was early on when Israel came into the land or toward the later end before the monarchy. Some speculate that it was around the time of Gideon. And I think the only reason for that is because of what is mentioned here, that there was a famine in the land. If you remember back when the Midianites were oppressing Israel, this right prior to Gideon being raised up, they would go through and they would ravage the land so that there was nothing left for the people of God. As when it would come to harvest time. And you remember when Gideon was approached by the angel of the Lord, he was winnowing his wheat in a wine press somewhere to keep it out of sight of the Midianites. So again, that's purely conjecture on that, but a possibility, I guess, nonetheless. So a famine in the land, certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, goes over to Moab, he, his wife, and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech. The name of his wife was Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to the country of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. Now they took wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died, so the woman survived her two sons and her husband. So to give you an idea of where they went from Bethlehem in Judah, about 50 miles to the east into present-day Jordan, to the land of Moab. The map's kind of tilted on its side, so you can get an idea how it is. And the players that we're talking about here, Elimelech, Naomi, their kids, Mahlon and Chilion, and then the two girls they married, Orpah and Ruth, and the meanings of their names to the side of it. Elimelech, God is my king. Naomi, pleasant. Mahlon, sickly. Chilion, pining. Maybe that's a little indication that they weren't doing too good when they were born, and possibly maybe that's why they passed on. I don't know. Orpah, gazelle, and Ruth, friendship. And so now that she has come, and admittedly, it's a difficult time for Ruth because she has lost her husband and she has lost her two kids. And so she is over there, really, when you think about it, by herself. She's with these two Moabite daughter-in-laws. It tells us in verse 6, then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. Therefore, she went out from the place where she was and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest each in the house of her husband." So she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, "Surely we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn back, my daughters, go, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband tonight and should also bear sons, would you wait for them till they were grown? Would you restrain yourselves from having husbands? No, my daughters, for it grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Now, even as early as chapter 1, there is this concept that we're learning about called the levirate marriage. And that is when a man dies, it would be the responsibility of his brother to marry the man's widow and raise up offspring to have the man's name continue on. And so that's why she's saying, "Are you going to wait for me to have more children?" In other words, these would be brothers of your dead husbands so that they could marry you and raise up offspring for the dead to continue the name on. So we're getting that even in chapter 1, and that's going to become very dominant as the book continues on. So the concept of the levirate marriage, and besides, you know, she's saying, would you really wait that long anyway? And notice, too, as we're here in chapter 1, that Naomi is taking this hard. I mean, understandably so. She's lost her husband. She's out of her homeland, and she's lost her two kids. They've been there 10 years. Thankfully, the famine has ceased. Who knows? Maybe Gideon has risen up and conquered the Midianites. Again, speculation. But she's taking it, obviously, quite difficult. "The hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Verse 14, "Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her, and she said, 'Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law.'" So Orpah made a choice to stay behind in her homeland. But Ruth said, verse 16, "Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts you and me." When she saw that she was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her. Now, John Walvoord says this is one of the most beautiful expressions of commitment in all the world's literature, and it is very, very powerful, as Ruth pledges her commitment not only to Naomi, but also to Naomi's God. This is a passage when I got married that we repeated after the pastor, both Marion and I, to each other as the pastor's leading us through this passage. And it's just, it's a profound passage of commitment to someone else. And so here Ruth is going to be there for her mother-in-law. It says in verse 19, "Now the two of them went until they came to Bethlehem. And it happened when they had come to Bethlehem that all the city was excited because of them. And the woman, women said, 'Is this Naomi?' But she said to them, 'Do not call me Naomi.'" Again, remember what her name means. Her name means pleasant. "Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara," which means bitter. "For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me." It sounds kind of like she's a little on the bitter side too, doesn't it? And again, I think it's understandable. She's lost her husband. She's lost her two sons. But there's kind of a concept here. There's a contrast, I think, between how Naomi is handling this at this point and, let's say, contrast it with Job, when Job lost everything. He lost his wealth. He lost his family. And remember, it says he fell down and worshiped. He said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return? The Lord has given, the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." I think we can fall to the Lord when difficult times come, and sometimes we can fall away from the Lord. And it's always going to help us if we fall to the Lord, because he's the one who can give us what we need to make it through, okay? So the Lord has dealt bitterly with me, Naomi's assessment of what's gone on. Verse 21, I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi or pleasant, since the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has afflicted me? So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab. Now they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. And so they have simply made the 50-mile trip back from Moab over to Bethlehem. And they have come into, it's interesting because they left Bethlehem, which means the house of bread, because of a famine. But now there's food back in the land. And so they've come back to the house of bread, Bethlehem. Chapter 2, there was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him, in whose sight I may find favor. And she said to her, go, my daughter. Then she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now, Boaz is referred to in verse 1 as a man of great wealth. That is a phrase that is translated elsewhere, a mighty man of valor. It's also a phrase that is used in chapter 3, if you want to turn over a page, of Ruth. But it's not translated a man of wealth or a mighty man of valor. It's translated, chapter 3, verse 11, now my daughter, do not fear, I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman. And so this phrase is used for both Boaz and for Ruth, meaning, again, an exceptional person, a mighty man of valor, or as we're looking at here, a man of great wealth, or as we'll see in chapter 3, a virtuous woman. And so Ruth, in going out to the fields to provide for her and her mother-in-law, does what was allotted for in the law. And this is the welfare system of the Old Testament. Leviticus chapter 23, verse 22 says, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field when you reap, nor shall you gather any gleaning from your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God. And so this is a way that the poor could be taken care of. But they would have to go out and they would have to gather it themselves. And I think it's an excellent welfare system. So you don't neglect the poor, but you also don't give them, you give them an incentive here to get out and do something. And I think that's something that's really gone tragically wrong in our country. I think there's been a heart in our country to help out the poor, which is a good thing. But let's face it, I mean, the poor have taken advantage of that. And I know where I speak, because I was one of those that did the same thing, not on welfare, but in the unemployment arena. Not because I just couldn't find a job anywhere. It was because being in the painting field as a worker for a painting contractor, when he ran out of work, I went on unemployment, and I had no desire nor intention to go find another job somewhere. To me, it was paid vacation, you know? And now, admittedly, this is before I was the pastor of the church, okay? Actually, before I was a Christian, all right? But I looked at it as free money. And so he would call up when he got more work, and I'd go back to work. And then when he ran out of work, I'd just go back on paid vacation again. And I know the mentality, because I lived it, and I lived it with my friends. And I know other people are just getting a handout. And it's become kind of an entitlement attitude that people have, that the government owes me this. Yet, if you go back to something like this, you're not going to drain the life out of the economy. And you're also, I think, going to give that person a sense of worth and integrity. You know, granted, this isn't my field, but I've gone out and I've picked it up myself, and I've brought my own food in. And I think it's just a lot healthier environment and system. God's word is, I mean, it's right, isn't it? And it shows us the right way on how we should do things. And so this is what Ruth is taking advantage of. And I don't know if you noticed in verse 3, but it says she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. You know, it's like by chance she just happened to go there. You know, what we consider coincidence oftentimes is a God incident, where God is lining the things up. In verse 4, it says, "Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, 'The Lord be with you.' And they answered him, 'The Lord bless you.'" And so Boaz is coming to his employees, basically. And you can see that there's a good relationship between the boss and the employees. Then Boaz said to his servant, who is in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" So the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, "It is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. And she said, 'Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves.' So she came and has continued from morning until now, though she rested a little in the house." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "You will listen, my daughter, will you not? Do not go to glean in another field, nor go from here, but stay close by my young women. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you?" It sounds like a protective issue that's going on right here. You remember when we were in the book of Judges last week, where there was that issue with the Levite's concubine that just got abused by the people of Gibeah and Benjamin. And so he wants to have her safe. And so, "Stay in my fields. I've instructed the young men not to touch you. And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn." Verse 10. "So she fell on her face, bowed down to the ground, and said to him, 'Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?' And Boaz answered and said to her, 'It has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother and the land of your birth, and have come to a people whom you did not know before. The Lord repay your work, and a full reward be given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge.'" You might say that Ruth is reaping what she's sown, in a good sense of the term, huh? I mean, she's been a blessing to her mother-in-law, and now that blessing is coming back to her as Boaz is favoring her. In the last part of verse 12, where it speaks about God having wings, this is referred to, this is what's known as a zoomorphism. Zoo, like animals in a zoo, zoomorphism, kind of taking animal characteristics and attributing them to God. Similar to what an anthropomorphism is, where you take human characteristics and attribute those to God, and trying to explain who God is and what he's like. God is spirit. He fills heaven and earth. But here the idea is Ruth has come under the shelter, like coming to a mother hen, the protective hen, her being the little chick. In Psalm 17, verse 8, it says, "Keep me as the apple of your eye, hide me under the shadow of your wings." And so likening God and his protective ability as Ruth has come here to be safe and to be protected. Verse 13, "Then she said, 'Let me find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants.' Now Boaz said to her at mealtime, 'Come here and eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar.' So she sat beside the reapers and he passed parched grain to her, and she ate and was satisfied and kept some back. And when she rose up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, 'Let her glean even among the sheaves and do not reproach her. Also let grain from the bundles fall purposely for her. Leave it that she may glean and do not rebuke her.' So she gleaned in the field until evening and beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley." Ephah is about what would fill up a 5-gallon paint bucket, or about 30 pounds. So a very good day's effort. "Then she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, so she brought out and gave to her what she had kept back after she'd been satisfied." So the parched grain from lunch that she had kept back, now she breaks out and gives it to Naomi, her mother-in-law. And her mother-in-law, verse 19, said to her, "Where have you gleaned today and where did you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." Then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he of the Lord, who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and the dead. And Naomi said to her, this man is a relation of ours, one of our close relatives, our next of kin. Ruth the Moabitess said, he also said to me, you shall stay close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women and that people do not meet you in any other field. So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. Now, barley harvest was from March to April, wheat harvest June and July, so she's got an income coming for quite some time there. We're introduced in chapter 2 primarily that Boaz is a close relative or next of kin, and this is going to become significant because the next of kin were the ones who would help out the poverty-stricken of their family, of their relatives. And so here, these two are obviously poverty-stricken and need help, and so he's a close relative, one that could come in and assist them. And we'll talk about that as we make our way through that concept of the Goel or the kinsman redeemer. So we come into chapter 3. It says, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now Boaz, whose young women you were with, is he not our relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Now the concept of winnowing is when they would harvest the crop, and then they would go and they would run a threshing sledge across it, something like what we see here on the screen, to separate the grain from the stalks. And then they would take and winnow it or throw it up in the air, usually on a hilltop where the wind might be blowing by, and it would separate the grain from the chaff and blow the chaff away, and you would be left with the grain. And so here, as Boaz is up at the end of barley harvest, winnowing his grain or at this time winnowing his grain so that he can have it, and Naomi is instructing Ruth to go up at this time and to communicate with Boaz that he is in fact a kinsman redeemer, a next of kin. Verse 3 of chapter 3, therefore wash yourself and anoint yourself, put on your best garment and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go in, uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do. And she said to her, all that you say to me, I will do. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed her. And after Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was cheerful, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Now, some might see this as a provocative gesture on Ruth's part, coming on to Boaz, if you will. But what it actually is a very submissive act, like the role of a servant awaiting the commands of his master. What she's doing in going and going underneath the part of his covering is much like was being referred to when Boaz said of her, you have sought refuge under the wings of the Lord God. She's basically doing the same thing with him, seeking refuge under him. In other words, looking to him to be her protector. And so forth. The covering of the garment, symbolic of coming under the protection of Boaz. Verse 8 says, now it happened at midnight that the man was startled and turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, who are you? So she answered, I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative. So you see the same terminology there. Take me under your wing. I've come under the wing of the Lord, but I want to come under your wing and be protected by you, as she says, for you are a close relative. The Hebrew is Goel. It means a kinsman redeemer. And again, what does a kinsman redeemer do? He helps out his close relatives. So we find in the law that the next of kin would redeem a piece of property sold by a poor relative, or redeem a poor relative that sold himself into slavery. Also, the Goel was the avenger of blood. Do you remember when we talked about that? We talked about the cities of refuge. If somebody got killed, then it was the living brother who would go and try and avenge the person, or avenge the death of his brother. And the person would have to flee to the city of refuge. There's two things that are going on here. There's going to be the redemption of the land that Naomi and Elimelech had. But there's also going to be the idea of the levirate marriage, Deuteronomy chapter 25. And this is where the near of kin would raise up offspring to perpetuate his dead brother's name. And so, again, the levirate marriage, the idea, my brother has died, he has no children, I'm supposed to go and marry the widow of my brother, and then the firstborn would be accredited to his name, and that way his inheritance would continue on, his name would continue on. It's something, again, that we see in the scriptures, and something where they would continue to have their various land allotments. So we're going to see Boaz here agree to perform the duty of the close relative, as we read on. So verse 10, then he said, blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman. Yeah, I think just his testimony of who she is flies in the face of those who would say that this was an improper move on her part or any form of impropriety taking place as she approached him at the threshing floor. Verse 12, now it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Stay this night, and in the morning it shall be that if you will perform the duty of a close relative for you, good, let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you as the Lord lives, lie down until morning. So it's kind of put a little wrench in the situation here. And undoubtedly, after 3 or 4 months of Ruth being there in Boaz's field, she's probably really come to like and appreciate who he is, because he seems like a great guy, a godly man. And now that there is a kinsman redeemer that's a closer relative than Boaz, it kind of heightens the tension here as to who this might be and would he perform the rite of the kinsman redeemer. So he's going to settle the business in the morning, verse 14. So she laid his feet until morning, and she arose before one could recognize another. Then he said, do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. Also he said, bring the shawl that is on you and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 ephahs of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. Now, if that is to be read as 6 ephahs, you remember how much an ephah is? 30 pounds. So if this is 6 ephahs, 180 pounds, boom, here, you know, either she is a real burly woman or, well, check this out. In my translation, the word ephah is in italics, okay, which means that it's not there. It's supplied by the translators. Other translations have the word measure there, 6 measures. And a measure is 1/3 of an ephah. So if we say a measure is 10 pounds, then 6 measures would be 60 pounds, which would be twice as much as she got when she gleaned the fields on her own, which is a little more probably realistic of what took place. And so anyway, it's kind of a little different light twist to what actually happened there. Verse 16, when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, is that you, my daughter? Then she told her all that the man had done for her. Verse 17, and she said, these 6, and again, ephahs in italics, of barley he gave me, for he said to me, do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law. Then she said, sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out, for the man will not rest until he's concluded the matter this day. How hard is it to sit still when you got something like this writing, you know? I mean, it's easy to get anxious. It's hard to be still and know that God is God and that he is in control. Psalm 37, verse 5 and verses 7 and 8 say, commit your way to the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret, it only causes harm. So that's what worry does for us. So to be still, to wait, to rest in the Lord and leave it in his hands. Chapter 4, now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, come aside, friend, sit down here. So he came aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit down here. So they sat down. Then he said to the close relative, Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. And I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me that I may know, for there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am next after you. And he said, I will redeem it. Now, Boaz is at the gate of the city, and this is the place where the business transactions took place. And so this is why it's all taking place there, as he grabs the elders of the city and they sit down, and the next of kin, who is closer than he is, and now he says, I will redeem that, this next of kin. And so the tension rises. I mean, for us, most of us, we know the end of the story. We know what happens. But can you imagine being in Naomi's shoes, or being in Ruth's shoes, being in Boaz's shoes? Because I think Boaz probably really likes Ruth as well. So it seems like he has like this one final trump card he's going to play here in verse 5. Then Boaz said, on the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance. In other words, it's not just buying that land. You got to marry this girl. And the close relative said, verse 6, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. You redeem my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot redeem it. Now, this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging to confirm anything. One man took off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was a confirmation in Israel. Therefore, the close relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself. So he took off his sandal. Now, why it was going to ruin his inheritance, he doesn't give the details on that. But if he took Ruth as a wife, somehow it was going to mess up his inheritance. And so the custom was to remove the sandal and to give it over to the person. And John Walvoord makes a comment on that as well, that the passing of the sandal symbolized Boaz's right to walk on the land as his property. So it was the closest relative's shot to get it. He takes off the sandal, and now Boaz puts it on, and he has the right to be able to tread on this property that he has got for himself. Now, if you go back to Deuteronomy 25, you kind of find the law surrounding this, and it concerns, again, helping out your next of kin. And specifically in Deuteronomy 25, it's referring to helping raise up offspring for the dead brother. I'll pull some of it up on the screen, but let me set it up just a little bit. Deuteronomy 25:7 says, if a man does not want to take his brother's wife, and so he has the option here, like this close relative did, to raise up offspring for Ruth's husband or to pass on it, if he doesn't want to do it, if a man does not want to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate to the elders and say, my husband's brother refuses to raise up a name to his brother in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Then the elders of his city shall call him and speak to him. But if he stands firm and says, I do not want to take her, Deuteronomy 25, 9 and 10, then his brother's wife shall come to him in the presence of the elders, remove his sandal from his foot, spit in his face, and answer and say, so shall it be done to the man who will not build up his brother's house, and his name shall be called in Israel the house of him who had his sandal removed. It seems like they did away with the whole spit in the face part of it and just went to the sandal being exchanged and all of this. And so I think the idea, and of course we've got examples in the Bible of where a man for selfish reasons didn't want to do that, to raise up offspring to his dead brother. And so it was a rude thing to do, a humiliating thing undoubtedly for the woman. And so hence the spitting in the face, the exchange of the sandal, and so forth. Verse 9, and Boaz said to the elders and all the people, you are witnesses this day that I've bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, I have acquired as my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brethren and from his position at the gate. You are witnesses this day. And all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. The Lord make the woman who is coming to your house like Rachel and Leah, the two who built the house of Israel. And may you prosper in Epaphroth and be famous in Bethlehem. Remember Rachel and Leah, wives of Jacob, the ones who were the mothers of the 12 sons, along with the handmaids too, that would become the 12 tribes of Israel. And so just asking for a blessing, like the founders of the nation, that this woman would be blessed by them. Verse 12, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring which the Lord will give you from this young woman. So now, again, remember they're from Epaphroth, another name for Bethlehem. They're from Bethlehem in Judah. And so they're looking back now to their specific ancestor, Judah, coming down to Boaz. It would be through one of his son named Perez. And so may you be blessed like Tamar, who brought Perez in. And this is where we come to one of the colorful stories that we find in the scriptures as we trace it through the genealogy that's come to Boaz and ultimately to David and on to Christ. And this is probably the first example that we see in the scripture too of the levirate marriage. Judah had three sons by a Canaanite woman. And Tamar married the firstborn, Ur. But Ur died. So then Tamar was given to the second one, Onan, and here Onan refused to raise up offspring to his dead brother Ur. And so really what we find in the text is that the Lord killed Onan. Well, from Judah's perspective, all he knows is his two kids are dead, and maybe this girl Tamar has like a jinx on her or something like that. So Judah wasn't going to give his third son, Shelah, to Tamar. And really, again, according to the whole levirate marriage concept, this would have been the right thing to do. To do what? To continue on the name of the dead. And so he wouldn't do that. So what Tamar did is she dressed herself up like a harlot and sat by the wayside when Judah came by. Long story short, they end up having a child together. Judah finds out who it is, Tamar, whatnot, and they end up having Perez and Zerah. And it was through Perez that Boaz came. And so hence the reference back to Tamar and Perez. But again, recognize as well that this is the line that leads to David. It's the line that leads down to Jesus. And so may you be blessed like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. So Boaz, verse 13, took Ruth, and she became his wife. And when he went into her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the women said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a close relative, and may his name be famous in Israel. And may he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons, has borne him. Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her bosom and became a nurse to him. Also, the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. He's the father of Jesse, the father of David. So Ruth, talk about, the possessive mother-in-law. Here, I'm taking your kid, and becomes his nurse, and then the neighbor ladies name the kid, But anyway, here comes Obed, who is the father of Jesse, the father of David, which makes Ruth David's great-grandma, right? Is that what it is? And so here, again, this Moabite woman who is used in a neat way as far as the line of David goes and also the line of Christ. Verse 18, as we look at the genealogy here, now this is the genealogy of Perez. Perez begot Hezron, Hezron begot Ram, Ram begot Abinadab, Abinadab begot Nashon, and Nashon begot Salmon, Salmon begot Boaz, and Boaz begot Obed, Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David. Now, Take a moment and turn to the genealogy in Matthew's gospel, in Matthew chapter 1. as we look at this same line that leads down to the line of Christ. Matthew chapter 1, beginning from verse 1, says the book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. And then it starts from Abraham to go all the way down to Joseph. Abraham begot Isaac, Isaac begot Jacob, Jacob begot Judah and his brothers. Verse 3, Judah begot Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Perez begot Hezron, Hezron begot Ram. This is what we just read. Ram begot Abinadab, Abinadab begot Nashon, and Nashon begot Salmon. Salmon begot Boaz by Rahab. Boaz begot Obed by Ruth. Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David, the king. David the king begot Solomon by her who had been the wife of Uriah. Who is that? Bathsheba. We have four women that are named here in the genealogy of Jesus. The first one is Tamar, a girl who played the harlot. The next one is Rahab. Did you catch that? Believed to be the one from Jericho who hid the spies, who was a harlot. Okay, so Tamar, a girl who played the harlot. Rahab, who was a harlot. The third one is Ruth, who is from Moab. And we haven't talked about this, but in the book of Deuteronomy, the Moabites were not allowed to come into the assembly of the Lord. And it says even until the 10th generation, it was basically saying the Moabites are banned from coming into the assembly of the Lord. Reason given is because Moab did not allow Israel to cross through their territory when Moses was leading them from the wandering in the wilderness up into the promised land. Do you remember it was Balak, king of Moab, who hired Balaam to come and to curse the children of Israel? And so Ruth, okay, who is among this group that is really to be banned from the assembly of the Lord, is also here in the line of Jesus. So one who played the harlot, one who was a harlot, one who is a Moabite, and then Bathsheba, who was an adulteress. And so what does this tell us? It tells us that the line that Jesus came from is human, okay? And it tells us that these people can be used by God. You know, look, I think of Rahab as a great example, who was a harlot, but then she embraced the God of Israel. Your God is God. And she came into that faith, into the children of Israel. And again, if it's referring to the same Rahab, then she is in the line of Christ, which is just an exciting thing. Also, I think about Bathsheba. And again, who's to blame the most for the whole thing, David and Bathsheba? The reality is, you've got repentance that comes in, and after the baby dies, you've got Solomon, Jedediah, beloved of the Lord. And you just see the grace of God, I think, so powerfully in just the genealogy in Matthew chapter 1. And so as we conclude the book of Ruth, it's a story that goes from tragedy to triumph. It goes from Naomi pleasant to Mara bitterness, but then Romans 8:28, we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are the called according to his purpose. And so the book of Ruth, from tragedy to triumph, the story of a virtuous woman, Ruth, and also the story of a man of integrity, Boaz, a godly man who loved the Lord and cared for the poor. And finally, as we close this out, I just want to lay down how this is a or how Boaz is kind of an example of Jesus in the scriptures, a type of Christ, if you will, because Boaz was a kinsman redeemer, a next of kin who came in to rescue Ruth and Naomi, to not only buy up the land, but to marry her, this Jewish man marrying this Gentile bride, to give them a hope and to give them a future. And of course, with Jesus, we see him who, being in very nature God, Philippians chapter 2, came to this earth and became a human being. So you could say he became a next of kin to us. You know, he came to the human race and became one of us, filled with integrity, obviously, caring for the needy and the poor. And he redeemed us, not just out of poverty, like Boaz redeemed Ruth and Naomi, but he redeemed us from slavery to sin and to death. And Jesus, as our Redeemer, provides a glorious destiny for us. It's kind of cool how Jesus is likened to the bridegroom, and the church, which is predominantly Gentile, is likened to his bride. And so you've got that parallel connection there as well. So one day he will marry this Gentile bride, all because he, Jesus, was willing to become our kinsman redeemer to give us a future and a hope. So there is the book of Ruth. Next time, we'll be looking at 1 Samuel, the first 15 chapters. if you'd like to read ahead. Let's pray, and then we'll open it up. Lord, thank you for the time we could spend here in this beautiful story, story of a faithful daughter-in-law, and just words of such commitment and effort and love between her and Boaz, and being right there within the line of your son coming in. Thank you for the encouragement that we find in this, and Lord, may you continue to draw us closer to you, I pray as well. In Jesus' name, amen.